if this had run when it was scheduled to run, it would have made a difference?
You know, I don't know. I think that ultimately in my race, it was about money and just being so totally outspent by the other side. I think for some of the other candidates, it may have helped a little bit. But this election cycle really wasn't, yes, overall the theme was about Iraq, but I think if you look at the individual races where you had an open seat and you didn't have an incumbent where you could you rail against their vote on the war, it wasn't about the war always. It was about, you know, the change in direction and health care and those things.
Do you have plans to run in 2008, Tammy? We just have 10 seconds.
I haven't ruled it out, but, you know, right now I have a job to do to advocate for veterans, and I'm going to work as hard as I can on this new mission.
Craig Renaud, when does this film air tonight?
It airs tonight at 9 p.m. on the Discovery Times channel.
I want to thank you for being with us. Craig Renaud, together with his brother Brent Renaud, Arkansas filmmakers, have directed the film Taking the Hill, premiering tonight. And Tammy Duckworth ran for Congress. Thanks so much for both being with us. That does it for the broadcast. Our website is democracynow.org, where you can read the transcripts. We video and audio podcasts there. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Rufo Del Caduce, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Rich and Aaron Mate, Lee Burek, Jen Utes, Mike DeFilippo, and Nick Marsilio are our engineers. Special thanks to Uri Galed, Angela Alston, Hugh Grant, Megan Whitney, Samantha Chamblee. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
WUSD Stony Brook.
The All Ages Show brings you releases from labels such as Discord, Polyvinyl, Saddle Creek, Sub Pop, Touch and Go, and more. Tune in every Wednesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. here on WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
How old is old? All Ages Show. How old is old? All Ages Show.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook at 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you from this Tuesday evening where, once again, the station has outsmarted me. Thought I'd be able to make the sound a little bit better, but now someone thought of something and headed me off at the pass, and yeah, we're still stuck with a mono signal out of the delay system, which, boy, I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all, but regardless, we got to get on with business. We have a lot of things to talk about tonight, and hopefully we'll take some of your phone calls a full hour tonight. No sports interrupting us this week, and all sorts of fun and wacky things going on. It's that time of year again, that lovely time of year where we all are caught up in the spirit of false sincerity and not saying the things that are really on your mind. But we're going to try and get over that tonight. I got to tell you, though, it's getting difficult. It's getting difficult to hold my tongue. I think this is the year, finally, where I've gotten more holiday greeting cards from machines and corporations than from people. You know what I mean? It's not. I mean, it's insincere enough when somebody just picks out some stupid Hallmark thing and sends it to you, and supposedly that's a thought sent your way. It's really just a task that's finished. If someone sends me a letter, okay, that's different. You know, letter saying, hey, how are you? Been thinking about you. Things like that. That's nice. That's sincere. But to just, you know, buy a card, sign in. I know. I do this. Okay, it takes 10 seconds. You go to the store, you buy the thing, you sign your name, you address it, put it in the mail. Okay, a little bit more than 10 seconds, but still, it's all robotic work. And once you're done, you feel like, okay, that's out of the way. That's finished. It's not something I wanted to do, it's something I had to do. And usually you're doing it because somebody did it to you first, so you have to get back at them. And the worst people are the ones who wait until the very end so that you get their card when it's too late for you to send one back. So it becomes sort of like a war. So that's not really the holiday spirit, is it? It shouldn't be. But now there's this whole new phenomena going on where all the companies, all the corporations that I do business with, not because I want to, but because I have to, they're now sending me holiday greetings as if they care, as if they're even human. And tonight I brought in a bunch of them. Listen to this. Listen to the stack. That's a lot. That's like a half dozen cards there that just came in the last week. All from companies. And I thought I'd peruse a few of them and just see what we have on the list tonight. Okay, this one came from the insurance company. Policy number 2002? Just special for you. Oh, isn't that nice? But is that outdated? I mean, policy number 2002, should they have come up with a new rhyme for 2006? I think maybe they forgot about that. Anyway, it's one of these long cards, and it says, Busy Elves Holiday Policy. Get it? Because they're an insurance company, so they're sending me a policy for Busy Elves. Good Lord. Issued by the Busy Elves Insurance Company to ensure much happiness and joy to the holder of this very special holiday policy. Yeah, and there's little pictures of elves and prancing around on the front cover. Then you open it up and there's this kind of official-looking writing that says, The Busy Elves Holiday Policy. This special holiday policy is issued by the Busy Elves Group in accordance with the rules and regulations concerning special holiday celebrations. Be it known that because the holder of this policy is known to be of high moral fiber. How dare you accuse me of being of high moral fiber? I find that extremely offensive. I work hard to maintain my reputation, and in one sentence, one phrase, you tear it down and call me somebody of high moral fiber. Don't think my lawyers are not already working on this. Hey, I didn't get a card from my lawyers, those bastards. Anyway, and also, I'm an all-around good person. Again, another insult. All-around good person? That's not how I want to be remembered. I want to be remembered as an instigator, a troublemaker, the person that somebody crosses the street to avoid. All-around good person. This isn't some movie from the 1950s. All-American Emmanuel Goldstein here. People have parades in his honor. No, that's not me. Anyway, said policyholder is entitled to and assured of all the benefits and privileges deemed necessary to enjoy a happy holiday. Just what are those exactly? Tell me, insurance company. Because I know you always make it as difficult as possible to get the benefits and privileges that I pay for. So what are the benefits and privileges that I get now so that I can enjoy a happy holiday from you? What are those? Where are they? I didn't see them. They weren't enclosed in this envelope. Anyway, finishes off here. To wit, of which there is not very much of here. The pleasure and company of loving family and or good friends. A holiday season of joy and goodwill. A happy new year of good fortune and good health. So are these things that you're bringing me? And if I don't get these things, you're liable, correct? I just want to make this clear. And then they actually signed it. The human beings down at the insurance company signed it. I'm sure they signed 1,000 of these things, but this is actually one of the better ones. It's one of the ones where people were involved at some stage. Let's see. We've got this this other one on the way. That's from a real person. I'm not going to read that. Well, it got mixed in because it looks exactly the same. Here's a nice little flowery vase. I'll get to that one in a second. This is better. Hang on. The holidays are here, and all these happy people in front of a, looks like a television set. Hope they don't fly by too fast. Dear Emmanuel, wishing you crystal clear, state-of-the-art joy at the holidays and always. Warm wishes from your friends at DirecTV and Disney Channel. P.S. We've enclosed a little holiday shopping treat to in appreciation of your business. Enjoy. And I get a little coupon for a store that I now have to trek to redeem. And I got to buy Disney products, which I don't want to do ever. So yeah, okay, I've got this Hallmark card. It's funny, it comes from the Disney Channel and DirecTV, but not the Hallmark Channel. There's a Hallmark Channel on DirecTV now. I don't know why. I don't know what they do. It's nice and wholesome, I suppose. Let's see. Shell Oil Company sent me a Shell gift card. Isn't that nice of them? I just have to agree to sign up for something, but that's part of their holiday cheer. And, how about this? This one. Oh, boy, this one kind of spooked me out. This comes from the university right here at Stony Brook. And it's not a holiday card. It's a birthday card. Because I'm a Sagittarius, and apparently, I guess, of course they know when I was born. Because I went here. And you have to tell them all these things. You got to give them your name. You got to give them your address, birthday, weight, height. All that stuff. And they don't forget it, ever. They hold on to this. And then they use it against you in the future, like they're doing right now. Look at this. This nice little card with flowers in a vase. To live is so startling, it leaves little time for anything else. Emily Dickinson. Well, it's not Emily Dickinson sending me the card. That would be kind of spooky. Here's another quote. May your birthday be filled with discovery and joy. Happy birthday from your friends at Stony Brook University. Signed, Shirley Strom Kenny, the president. I don't think she really sent this. But, it does come from a person. Person, his name, the name is signed, but I am sure, I'm certain that a computer did this. And it's nice, it's a nice sentiment, but still it's kind of like they're telling you, you know, we're watching you. We know about you. Don't try anything. So it makes you a little bit nervous. Imagine if you just got a list of all these, say, corporate executives someplace. And you simply sent them greetings when their birthday came around. I think they'd be a little spooked. Especially if they weren't advertising that. Celebrities is one thing, because celebrities, that information is out there. And they expect all kinds of Looney Tunes to be constantly writing to them. But in this particular case, kind of trying to be a private citizen, and it's a little unnerving. And how do they know if you're dead? You know, that's the other thing. Because I don't think there's anything on the Stony Brook forums to indicate when you die. So are they going to just keep sending you cards? Or maybe that just hasn't been a problem yet. But I think it might be. Corporate greeting cards. I don't know. This does not bode well. But this is the first year I've gotten more of those than of the humankind. And the humankind are nicer, but not much more sincere most of the time. Because it's, like I said, just something you have to do. And phone calls. What happened to phone calls? People don't make phone calls anymore. They send instant messages and emails, maybe, if you're lucky. But it's just not the same. Okay, I've got a brand new toy that I've been playing with the last week or so. Nice, solid piece of metal. And this, my friends, I'm not going to turn it on because it might actually affect something here in the studio. Like everything else does. So I'm just going to describe it. This is a nice solid metal device with no indications of what it is except for a power light and a charge light and an on-off switch. And on the back it simply says this will take 3 hours to charge. Don't charge while the power is on. And ensure the antenna is always fixed before turning on. And what is this thing, you might ask? A lot of people would ask that if they just saw this thing. They might be kind of scared by it. But what it actually is a cell phone jammer. Oh, yeah. These things are amazing. These things are fantastic. What they allow you to do is simply, in any place that you happen to be at the moment, you can turn this thing on, and everybody around you will not be able to use their cell phones. And I have to tell you, this thing is a godsend. It is amazing, because there are so many times, where people around you just do not know how to behave themselves when they're on cell phones. Now, you may ask, so what's the difference between somebody who's just having a conversation and somebody who's actually just talking on a cell phone? For some reason, people who talk on cell phones feel they have to talk a lot louder, a lot more emphatically, and be, I guess, more aggressive in the way they speak. And you wind up just becoming drawn into their conversation. Two people can be talking, they could even be arguing, and I can tune them out. I can just go about my business because that's their affair. But when I just hear one person talking into thin air, it's really, really hard. Like that person on the train a few weeks ago, my God, I learned everything there was to know about her life. And I did not want to know any of it. I just wanted to read my book. I could not do that. The guy behind me giving technical support to some poor slob someplace whose Windows machine had crashed, whispering into my ear because he's leaning forward in the seat behind me, and I'm hearing all these details. Well, no more, because one flick of the switch and they will either have to not make that phone call or go someplace else to make it. And I don't know if these devices are even legal to use. So, of course, we're speaking theoretically here. But they're not too difficult to get your hands on. And, boy, they are a ton of fun. I was on the LIRR, that's the Long Island Railroad out here in Long Island, New York. And I had this thing with me. And I got to say, I was going from Stony Brook to New York City. And I had my finger on the switch the whole time. I was ready. I was ready to turn this thing on at a moment's notice. But everybody was acting really good. You know, they were all behaving themselves. And I was kind of surprised. I was surprised, but I was also a little disappointed because I wanted to use the thing. But no, as long as people were talking onto the phone and they were being polite and they were being quiet, you couldn't tell if they were on the phone or not. That is how you should conduct yourself on the phone. Ah, but then it changed. Shortly after getting into Nassau County, this guy behind me decides he's going to start taking care of business. And you know the type. They always start off really loudly for some reason. You're just sitting there reading a book or even listening to music. They overpower you then sometimes. And you just hear, hello? Doris, is that you? Yeah, could you put your mother on the phone? Yeah, is she outside? Yeah, could you, just every single detail of this person's life all of a sudden. Hey, did you bring in the mail today? Yeah, I'll be home in about 20 minutes. I just wanted to make sure you brought in the mail. Are we having dinner tonight? Or what are we having? It's just every single possible minute piece of crap that this person feels he has to parlay to the other person on the other end. I just considered this for 5 seconds. I said, you know what? No, I can't allow this. You're not making this call now. You're not doing this. No. Say goodbye. Well, actually, he didn't say goodbye. He said hello because he couldn't hear. He kept saying hello about 15 times. Hello, 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 hello. Of course, wasn't able to hear anything and eventually stopped speaking. And I cast a little side glance to the back, and of course, he's just staring straight ahead, glazed look in the eyes, no idea what to do. Nobody to talk to. No thoughts to think. I kept it on for about 10 minutes and then turned the thing on because, again, I want to give people who have the right idea, who know how to use cell phones, I want to give them back their freedom to communicate with people if they need to or send SMS messages. Turn it on. 2 minutes later, he's back on the phone again. Look, you're on your way home, for God's sake. You're going to be home in 20 minutes. What's wrong with you? Can't you actually, you're probably one of these people who, as soon as you get home, you plop yourself in front of a television set and don't say a word to your family. And you do all your communicating when you're on the train heading towards them. But I'm sorry. You're not going to mess up my life and cause me to, like, be drawn into your little world. And not be able to read my book or concentrate or just think my own thoughts simply because you don't know how to speak in a normal tone of voice on a phone. Or maybe you just have a lousy phone where you have to yell and scream. Sorry, not my problem. Your problem now because my cell phone blocker is on and wow, it's just instant magic. It's just instant magic. You could feel the tension. You could feel the guy, his fist clenching because things weren't working his way. The world no longer made sense. The cell phone did not work. Maybe he canceled his contract. Maybe he threw the phone out the window. Maybe he took it out on his family when he got home. You know what? I'm not guilty. I don't feel like this is my fault. I don't care. I just wanted to take a trip in relative peace and quiet. And I did. I did. And then I had more fun in the city just testing out this thing. Walking down a street, and I saw these two guys. They look like, kind of menacing people. I don't like to judge people based on their looks, but they were about, 8.5 feet tall and 500 pounds, and they kind of swaggered when they walked, and they were both making plans, I guess, to meet other similar people on their cell phones. And so I just thought it would be fun to make that a little bit more difficult. And so I was walking behind them with the thing on, and they just kept looking at their phones and dialing over. They're in some kind of an endless loop and getting more and more frustrated and not aware that this meek person mere feet behind them was the one who was actually messing with them to such a degree. I mean, I would have been killed on the spot had they realized what I was doing. And it was kind of a vicarious thrill knowing that. But there's no way they could ever find out unless they know about these things and they somehow are able to tell that I have one. They have a cell phone blocker detector. I don't think they have those, do they? I hope not. So, yeah, I recommend these things for anyone who wants to just gain a little control back. They're expensive, a couple hundred bucks. And if you look on the webs, World Wide Web, that thing out there, you'll probably be able to find someplace that has those. You won't find them in stores, I'll tell you that. So between this and the TV Be Gone that I've been wandering around with, turning off TVs that are annoying, it's almost like I'm back in control. So yeah, that's a bit of fun I've been having for the holidays, just turning off things that I find offensive. And I know it's not right, it's not fair, but it sure feels good. Okay, we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit, maybe about I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. So write down the number, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I don't know what's happening at 7. I know that Bill Darling is sick, and he's not going to be in for the Blues show tonight. So I have publicly threatened the radio station, saying that if somebody does not come in and do Blues, I'm going to be playing Yoko Ono until somebody does. And I have the CD. I brought it with me. So I'm not kidding. So if anyone out there would like to do a Blues show, you know the way to the station. We'll see what happens. Speaking of feeling good, feeling bad is something that a lot of people have been doing around here. People who have gone to Taco Bell, not just for the usual reasons, but for the reasons that surround the whole E. coli controversy. 64 cases of E. coli bacteria related to the outbreak that hit several Taco Bell restaurants in the Northeast in the past couple of weeks have now been confirmed. And one of those includes the first confirmed case in New York City. However, Taco Bell officials say the restaurants are now completely safe for consumers, as long as they don't eat anything. Although CDC officials said no food source has been confirmed in the outbreak, Taco Bell officials, isn't that kind of a bizarre thing to think of? Hello, I'm a Taco Bell official. I mean, government officials, yeah, Taco Bell official. It just sounds so foolish. But I guess that's what they are. Taco Bell officials said the chain will no longer serve green onions. However, green onions apparently are not the cause. Now they think it's regular white onions. Or something else. Nobody really knows. It's just amazing how you can just go someplace and before you know it, you're caught up in the midst of this. I went to the local Taco Bell during this period, and it's one of the ones that was cited as being a source. And I feel terrible. I don't feel terrible physically. I feel terrible mentally because I'm missing out. You know, I could have been one of the people suing, making a mint. Saying, yeah, I had this horrible sickness. If I had only known to be sick then. But I wasn't. I felt fine. I even have the receipt to prove that I was there at that time. But you can't lie about these things, you know? It wasn't very good, but it wasn't the cause of illness. So, yeah, the fast food industry is in turmoil and mayhem. Because, you know, these ingredients are supplied in such massive amounts to the entire nation and from such crazy sources. The food is made in factories. And if something goes wrong, it goes wrong all over the place. Ironically enough, this was the book I was reading, Fast Food Nation, telling me all these things while I was turning people's cell phones off. So, yeah, it's a crazy situation. But I was driving around, and I was looking at all these places, all these fast food outlets and how they're being affected one way or another. And I think that's actually a good thing, because maybe it'll drive people to real food places or to make food on their own, or maybe not eat as much food, all these things that we should be considering. But the mass consumption of the factory food is something that is overall not a very healthy thing to do. And I've been reading one of the really scary things in this book that I've been reading, and I really recommend it to everybody. Haven't seen the film yet. Fast Food Nation is now a film as well. But this is really scary. Do you know that if you took away all the natural and artificial flavors, which are really very similar, there's nothing really natural about a natural flavor. If you took all that away, it would be extremely bland and flavorless. And the way they add the flavor is simply by a bunch of chemists in some big building, which is usually along the New Jersey Turnpike someplace, manufactures a taste that is deemed to be just the right kind of charcoal broiled meat flavor that you happen to be looking for in that product, and applying it. And that's all it is. That's all it is. The flavor is not actually coming from the food that you are eating. It's coming from the chemical that is sprayed on top of it. And, you know, reading that just kind of threw my world into upheaval because, wow, nothing is sacred anymore. What you're tasting is not really what you're eating. But I'll tell you, at the same time, I'm in awe that this is actually possible, that we can do things like this, that we can create flavors and completely replicate the way food tastes. And I would like to have fun with this. I would like to have, I mean, imagine you're eating French fries, but it tastes like a chocolate bar. Or a hamburger that smells like perfume. There are so many things that you can do. And a lot of them are really, really bad too. Think of some of the worst smells in the world, and you can create those as well. And really cause somebody to go through a living hell. Now, this has gotten me depressed because I'm thinking, well, is anything I taste, is it real anymore? And of course, the stuff that comes from the ground and is grown in a non-corporate atmosphere where seeds are treated as copy-protected material, don't reproduce, and you have to buy the seeds from the corporation every year, this is the kind of world we're moving into, where food growing becomes copyrighted. If you get your food from a place that's fairly natural, yeah, it still has real taste. But what is real taste? What makes that real taste more real than the taste that's applied? It really throws your world upside down. And then I passed by Price Club, you know, one of the Price Clubs. I'm saying Price Club as sort of a generic term because there are so many of them now. And I realize how our mentality towards buying things has changed so much, where you go into this place and you just buy this massive amount of something, where ordinarily you would buy a small amount that would last you a couple of days. Instead, you buy a case of water or something that'll last you a month. Or a 55-gallon drum of mayonnaise, or God knows what else. You go into these places and you see the people. First of all, the people are really, really huge, okay? Because they seem to be consuming a whole lot more. But everybody's waddling down these massively wide aisles with incredible amounts of products that you'd think they're stocking an army base someplace to get that kind of quantity. But how can you argue with it when the prices are so low? And I was faced with a problem last time I was in there, actually. I wanted batteries. All I wanted were some batteries for my flashlight because occasionally we have power failures out here. Haven't quite gotten the knack of it yet. And I have a flashlight, but it takes D-size batteries. I don't have any. Or I don't have any that are working. So I just wanted to get two or three D-size batteries, D-cells, whatever you call the things. And I was in this Price Club monstrosity, and I found the battery section. But the only way I could buy batteries was if I bought 20 of them. And I got to say, it was tempting because think about it. If I bought 20 of these batteries, that's pretty much it for me. That will cover my lifetime. I never have to worry about, unless I get more flashlights, which I'm not going to do. But if you look at batteries, they have this incredible lifespan, and you can just keep using them over and over again. So I was tempted. Should I get this many batteries and never worry about it again? But I know from history that I'm not going to remember where I put the things. I'm going to wind up buying another pack of these things in a couple of years. And one day I'll just find all these unused batteries all around my house. And the whole thing is just basically a con job and a waste of time. So, I decided not to get those. And in fact, I have yet to find them. So I still have no batteries, but I feel like I made the right decision. And then, okay, here's something else that happened after that. This has got nothing to do with fast food or chains or big people or things like that. I had to get something notarized. Yeah, you're hearing all about my boring days of driving around town and taking care of errands. Basically, I had to get a lease signed. And it was overdue, in fact. The people were starting to get on my case. Hey, come on, give us a lease here. You got to renew the lease. But the only reason why I hadn't renewed the lease was because you got to get a notary public to sign the part where you sign. And while I was doing this, it's hard getting them because they all go home at a certain time. You have to go to a bank that has one that's there. I was wondering, why in God's name is this necessary? What magical powers does this person have that allows them to be more trustworthy than me? I mean, these people who want me to sign the lease, they know me. They know who I am. They would recognize me coming down the street and they'd go to the other side of the street like everybody else. So what is so special about me going to some complete stranger who looks at my license and looks at my name on this lease and says, yes, that is the same person, and gives her little stamp, and that's it. That's it. Why in God's name is that such an amazing thing? Why is that so important? And what kind of legal weight does this carry? And I know somebody has the answer there. I'm not really interested in hearing the answer. I just think it's stupid and bizarre that I can't just sign something in front of somebody who knows me. I have to seek out some stranger who does not know me to confirm that I'm telling the truth, or that confirm that I'm who I say I am. And what happens if I'm not? What happens if I pull the wool over her eyes and she winds up signing for somebody else? Is she liable? What exactly happens then? I was considering becoming a notary public because when I was a kid, you got paid to do this. I think you got a quarter every time you signed something. Now nobody charges anymore for some reason. But I actually, back then, I thought of that. Hey, that could be some income. A quarter for signing my name. I was pretty desperate back then, but it seemed like easy money. It still seems like you don't really have to know a whole lot, although I think there is a test. I don't know what you have to know to pass this test. And no, I have absolutely no interest in becoming a notary public anymore. I just want to know why they exist. Okay, and let's take a look at some of the news items that have... Oh, I'm sorry, I totally forgot. Oh, they're going to breathe down my neck about this. First of all, apologies for last week, where we played some unfortunate holiday music. The Christian Coalition has been on my case about this. I've gotten lots and lots of emails, and I just want to say I'm sorry. Jesus rocks, all that kind of thing. And... for those who don't know, those outside of the country, of course, we realize here that the religious right runs the media, and we have to placate them in various ways, and we're happy to do that. We're pleased as punch to make them happy. That's what we're here for. Praise the Lord. And all that kind of thing. So what we're doing this this year, you've probably noticed it by listening to all the radio stations you listen to, that there's a lot more of a Christian theme, you know, that we're a lot more of... holiday cheer that really comes from the heart because, well, we have to. And unfortunately, last week I played a couple of holiday songs that were not quite appropriate, and I do, again, apologize for that. I hope to make that up with some, maybe not music so much, but holiday stories, or Christmas stories, I guess is one way to say it. I'm not afraid to say that word. Don't care what everybody else says. So, okay, can we, do we have one? Not yet? Okay, we have one coming up, a story of Christmas cheer and something to help put the C back in Christmas, or whatever the phrase is. Okay, here it is. Enjoy.
Strange lights appear in the skies all over the world. The wife of a carpenter experiences virgin birth, and a baby is born with a head that glows like a fluorescent lamp. Dare I ask it? Yes. Was the infant Jesus neither man nor God, but merely one of the countless aliens that visit the Earth each and every day? The answer? Yes, definitely. Take that and shove it up the tube marked certainty, in the fuzzy place called the Twilight Zone.
You know, I think maybe it would be a good idea if I listened to these things before I just blindly put them on the air. It might be better. I trust people a lot, but maybe my trust is ill-placed. The phone's already ringing. I mean, it was a nice... No, it was nice. I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just... I don't know if it was entirely appropriate, and I don't know if our masters... colleagues out there will appreciate it. Let's see if we can get a better one. Maybe something off the satellite, because they don't mess up as much as we do. Okay. It is a holiday time of year, so let's try and be festive. Our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. We'd love to hear from you, and I mean that. With all sincerity, I do mean that. Augusto Pinochet is dead. Yes, the former dictator of Chile died this week. I don't mean to sound so boisterous and happy about that. But, you know, if I did have to sound boisterous and happy about somebody dying, it's hard for me to feel any kind of sadness about something like this. The guy was a bastard. But the thing that really annoys me is reading all the news stories and hearing all the news reports of this over the weekend. And basically their reporting of the story and leaving out a very important detail. Now, let me read a little bit of the New York Times rendition of this. And I see calls coming in. We're going to get to those calls. If you get disconnected, call right back, please. 631-632-9872. Thousands of demonstrators took to the streets in celebration on Sunday, almost immediately after news circulated of the death of the former dictator, General Augusto Pinochet. But within hours, the revelry was marked by violence, with confrontations breaking out, the police using tear gas and water cannons against a large group marching towards the presidential palace. The government called for calm on Sunday night. Here's the interesting thing. A spokesman for the White House, Tony Fratto, said Augusto Pinochet's dictatorship in Chile represented one of the most difficult periods in that nation's history. Our thoughts today are with the victims of his reign and their families. This is what annoys me. This is what annoys me, because in this story and in most of the stories that I've seen in American media, there is no mention of the fact that the United States helped to put this guy in power. It's like, yeah, he was a bastard, and thank God he's dead, or maybe not going that far, but at least calling him a bad person, remembering him that way, when in fact, we are responsible for him. Salvador Allende was democratically elected in Chile. He just happened to be a socialist, and that rubbed the United States the wrong way. Does it sound familiar? Maybe it sounds like Cuba. Maybe it sounds like Venezuela. Maybe it sounds like Nicaragua or Peru or any of the places where leftists have either taken control or threatened to take control, and it's really gotten us upset. In this case, in the case of Chile, the U.S. was able to influence a coup, a brutal coup that resulted in the death of Allende and the death of thousands, which this, to this day, in this day, does not sound like that many, and that's a horrible thing. I guess you need to kill millions of people to be taken seriously these days, but it was a brutal regime nonetheless. And I just think that we're forgetting a major part of history if we don't underline the point that, yeah, we put this guy in power. Once again, messing up the affairs of a different country of ours. So that was... A bit annoying, and I was wondering if anybody else might have noticed that. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. I'm going to read one piece of email, and I hope that we have our calls back when I finish with this piece of email. Let's see. Dear Manuel, I very much enjoy your show, Wit and Intellect. Not sure if you're listening to the right show. Here is an idea, potentially money-making and of use to society, regarding a fix for those rude public cell phone talkers. I guess it's something different than what I have. Have you ever noticed that some court recorder people use recording devices other than just typing testimony? They repeat the testimony into a type of sound horn device for recording, and their talking cannot be heard in the room. A similar cell phone accessory could be designed with a foldable sound dampening material like foam rubber, which thoughtful people could use while talking on the cell phone in public. Just an idea. I donate my invention rights to 2600, signed JJ. It's a good idea, JJ. I would have no trouble with seeing people walking around, talking into this foam rubber device, and me not having to listen to everything they're saying. They might look a little silly, but yeah, it would be a good thing. So somebody invent that, please. Okay. Let's see who's out there. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Tell us what's on your mind. And good evening. You're on the radio.
How you doing?
Speak up, please.
With the battery thing, if you just go to 7-Eleven, you could spend the same money and you won't have all the extra batteries.
You're right. You're right. I should have gone to 7-Eleven. What was I thinking?
Right, and then you don't have to worry about where you put or don't put them, and you'd be all set. And Pinochet, they had people that were like, you know, he had his following there, too, that they think he was a good guy. You know?
I know.
They kept the country from going the wrong way, people in Chile there.
Well, you always find people to support a military dictator. There's no question about that.
But we are definitely, you know, we had a big hand in it. All the documents are out there. It's not hidden. It's just not broadcast, like you say.
Yep, that's the thing that bugs me. Why is it that, I mean, a lot of people today, I think people who are serving in Iraq may not even know this, that we have this kind of a history, that we were responsible for this. Why do you think the media isn't reporting it?
I think that we don't want to paint a bad picture of the people that run our country, and even though they tend to be evil and sometimes do some very evil things, we can never really accept that fact and say, hey, you know what, we should stop what we do sometimes, because people get killed and, you know, a lot of bad things go wrong. We can never, have we ever been wrong and say, look what we did over here, that was wrong? We don't do that. And people die over it.
That's right.
We're not going to broadcast. Same thing, you don't see the bodies coming back, right, on the news.
Mm-hmm.
That's old news. Still doesn't happen.
It's not even on the front page anymore.
Right.
All right, thanks for your call.
Got it, buddy.
Do you have to learn from history, or what's the point? But speaking of painting people in a bad light, did you hear this? This was actually on Democracy Now! A little bit earlier. And what was likely her final legislative act in Congress, outgoing Representative Cynthia McKinney announced a bill Friday to impeach George Bush. Great. But the problem is, you got the most mentally unstable person in Congress, which she really is. She's a nut job. All right. I'm sorry if that offends people, but she acts like a complete maniac sometimes. That whole charade in the Capitol building where she got into fisticuffs with a security guard because he wouldn't recognize who she was, and she claimed it was a racial thing. I mean, whether or not it was, the way she behaved, I thought, was really not becoming of somebody in an elected office. But the thing that really upsets me about that is, why do Congress people feel that they don't have the responsibility? They should not be required to go through security gates while the rest of us do. I mean, I think my country is a lot more at risk because of the actions of people inside Congress than the actions of people outside. I think pilots should go through metal detectors. I think congressmen, I think presidents should. Everybody should be treated the same. There was all this fuss about a congressman's office being raided by the government because he was accused of a crime. Well, I mean, if he's accused of a crime, then he should be treated like anybody else who's accused of a crime. No free passes here. So it's just a shame that the only person who is submitting something like this is already seen as a lunatic. I agree completely with the bill. I would love to see it pass, but it's not going to for precisely that reason. And that seems to be a big problem with the Democrats and opponents to Bush, that they pick spokespeople who really just are not the best spokespeople to have. And it's not about appealing to everybody. It's about having somebody that you can stand behind and believe in. Anyway, the legislation has no chance of passing and serves as a symbolic parting shot, not only at Bush, but also at Democratic leaders. Get this, incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, has made clear that she will not entertain proposals to sanction Bush, and has warned the liberal wing of her party against making political hay of impeachment. What is wrong with these people? For God's sake, why? Why would you not want to sanction Bush for all that he has done. The guy is responsible for maybe as many deaths as Pinochet, maybe more. And okay, he didn't ride around in tanks and shoot people, but the end result is the same. Would you prefer it to be done through malice or through ignorance? He's guilty either way and should be held to account for it. It's just, why are people afraid to say this? Democrats especially. So yeah, he'll probably get away with it. No trial, no penalty. And this is why the rest of the world looks down upon us so much. And this is why so many people here look down upon our whole system so much. What do you think? 631-632-9872. We only have less than 10 minutes left. So we'd like to hear from our listeners out there. If you're driving in a car, please drive safely or pull over and make your phone call. 631-632-9872. Meanwhile, a congresswoman says a video clip showing her calling for Fidel Castro's assassination is fake. That charge was denied by the film's director. Representative Ileana Rose Lennon, a Republican of Florida, appears in the 28-second clip made available on the internet by the makers of a new British documentary, 638 Ways to Kill Castro. In it, she says, "I welcome the opportunity of having anyone assassinate Fidel Castro and any leader who is oppressing the people." However, the Havana-born lawmaker, recently tapped to become the top Republican in the House International Relations Committee, says the filmmakers spliced clips together to make the sound bite. Well, she also says, if it was possible, she has at some point mentioned Castro's potential assassination. If someone were to do it, I wouldn't be crying, she said. No one advocates assassination. What we are advocating for is free elections, freedom for political prisoners, free expression of ideas, and respect for human rights. That's how you get change in Cuba. Not assassination. That's an enlightened outlook. But it speaks to not being sorry when somebody is gone. All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the radio.
I had a comment to make about what...
Can you speak up, please?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
If George Bush was impeached, wouldn't that make Dick Cheney the president?
Yeah, that's a very good point. But is that reason enough to let him get away with it?
Well, you know something? I have my opinions about all this, and usually generally they're not popular.
Uh-huh.
But as inept as George Bush is, and as much as I can't wait till he's not president anymore, I still don't see him as the enemy.
Well, I can see what you're saying, that he seems like just, you know, an overall nice guy and all that. But the point is...
Radio right now?
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're on the radio. You're on delay, though, so you might not hear yourself right away.
Oh, okay.
Somebody has to take responsibility, and he is the decider. He is the person who makes the policy. He's a person who's not listening to everybody else with regards to how to deal with Iraq. He was not listening to anybody else with regards of getting into Iraq in the first place. And yeah, there are other people involved. Maybe that could be the beginning. Maybe a whole lot of people can be held responsible for this because, you know, this isn't just a mistake. This is I consider this a war crime. I consider this a war crime against our own people because they're the ones who are paying for it the most and suffering. Obviously, the Iraqi people are paying for it more than the American people. But what I mean is, We're paying for it in terms of having to literally pay for it and not gain anything in the eyes of the world. But, we victimized another country in a horrible way. Any other thoughts?
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't know. I think that there are still guys out there that want to cut all our heads off with kitchen knives, and I think they're the real enemy.
Well, yeah, but, you know, did they really want to do that as much before all this nonsense started?
Yeah, I do. I think it's been going on since the Crusades, and I think the Crusades took a hiatus for a few centuries, and it's never ended.
Well, the Crusades were something that the Christian world pretty much began, and it didn't work out so well, and it did cause a lot of hostility. And I think the same mentality is sort of at work here. No one's going to say this is a Crusade, but...
But isn't that, don't you think that says something, too, that the same the mentality hasn't changed in all these centuries?
We haven't learned anything.
He's improved, but our mindset is still, we still fight over the same things for the same reason.
Yeah, which is basically interpretation of particular people centuries ago and what God is saying, what God means. And if there is a God, he's probably laughing at us right now.
I don't know.
All right, thanks for your call.
Anyway, thank you. Bye.
All right, and are we late? Okay, I understand that there's a satellite story going on, and this one is going to be a good story? All right, well, I hope so. Okay, here it is.
He said, "Oh, no one will ever choose me. I'll never have a home."
Just then, as the clock struck midnight on Christmas Eve, a man noticed the little tree. The man was not dressed elegantly. He was actually quite poor. But he saw the tree, and he fell in love with it. And he said to the owner, "How much will it cost to buy this tree?" And the owner said, "Oh, that little tree, I'll give it to you for a quarter." And the man said, "That's just right." And he reached in his threadbare pants and pulled out a shiny quarter and gave it to the man. He picked up the little tree in his arms and took it home. And when he arrived home, his family was delighted with the little tree. It was going to be a happy Christmas after all. And everyone in the family agreed. It was the best Christmas tree they ever ate.
I'm just sorry we didn't get to that one earlier. Oh. See, that's the kind of story we should be playing. Okay, well, I'm sorry we joined that one late. That was right off the satellite, and those are the appropriate stories. So hopefully next week we'll have slightly better luck with good Christmas cheer. Still a minute or two, in case anybody's out there, stragglers who want to give their feedback, 631-632-9872. I'm not sure what's coming up next. You might hear the screaming voice of Yoko Ono if we don't have a blues program, and maybe we'll find something else to play as well. Let's see. Here's a listener named Ian asking how he can donate to WUSB at any time, not just during the pledge drive. Well, Ian, you can go to WUSB.fm, and you'll find a form there that you can fill out and donate to your heart's content, and we appreciate every little bit. We have another phone call. Okay, let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Yes, hello.
Hi, speak up, please.
How are you doing? I have a comment about Pelosi speech, that what she said.
Okay, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Brentwood, New York.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, unfortunately, right now, all the politicians are afraid of political suicide. So they better off telling all these good things about Bush. But let me tell you something. Actually, the deaths that have been going on since the Iraq War are higher than what happened in the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, and I know the deaths in Iraq, the number of people dying there on a daily basis, it's insane. They say... if we pull out, civil war will result, and I cannot imagine anything worse than this. This is as civil a war as I think you can possibly get. So it seems to be extremely bad. And what I'm worried about now is that the number of deaths are going to be approaching Vietnam levels fairly soon. And I think, you know, if part of this plan to fix Iraq involves sending even more troops in, I just see the Democrats falling into a big trap here, like they did in Vietnam as well, and just making this thing even bigger and longer lasting.
Getting bigger, and I think we should impeach Bush.
You think we should impeach Bush?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he should be held accountable. He should be put on trial, international court. But of course, no one's ever going to do this.
Saddam Hussein was charged for 30,000 deaths. That's more than Iraqi war, and he's being, punished by death row and all the stuff. Why not Bush?
Uh-huh.
He's not doing it himself, but he's sending our people to do it, and I think that's not right.
The big thing that we always hear about Saddam Hussein, he killed his own people. Well, so did Pinochet. So did every single dictator that we've supported over the years.
Yes.
And we don't hear that same righteous indignation with regards to them. It's hypocrisy. Thanks thanks for your call.
No, thank you. I like your program very much.
Thanks for listening. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
And good evening. You're on the radio.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment.
Go ahead.
My comment is I agree with the lady who was just speaking that that the Democrats, you know, they're afraid of committing political suicide. The whole thing with impeaching Bush, that's a great grand gesture, but once one Bush is down, another Bush will come up because there's already talks of his brother running for presidency. And just to think way, 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 way out there, there's this whole thing about a lineage of people who are already in line to become president, so what would be the point anyway?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, the whole conspiracy theory, the skull and bones and all of that other stuff. And I just don't, I see the point, but I don't see the point. And although I agree with the woman, but, you know, this whole, once Bush is out of office, I believe his brother will be right back in. And there's, you know.
That's scary, but you know, I see what you're saying, but I think something has to be done, and the effects of doing nothing, I think, would be far worse than the effects of doing something and then getting somebody else who's just a replacement for the person that pays the price.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do something, and
I would love to see something. I mean, happen, but it's just kind of scary when you look down the road. Where we come from and where we're going, even with the small, minute changes that have been made mm-hmm. in our own cultural society. It's just like, in my opinion, somewhere down the road, we might even become a police state. I mean, I'm walking down the street and I'm seeing, you know, I'm seeing the army at Penn Station. And
right.
it's just kind of crazy.
You always get marked as a lunatic fringe person when you say we're turning into a police state, but let's look at the signs around us. We see police armed, all kinds of paramilitary gear now. We're constantly being monitored and watched. Our rights are being eroded.
Our rights are being slowly taken away. And mm-hmm. like, they feel like most of Americans are like home drone, just a bunch of lemmings following the Pied Piper, and unfortunately we are,
mm-hmm.
you know, including the Democrats.
And a lot of that is because we don't pay attention to the past. We don't realize, hey, it wasn't like this 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or we did put this dictator in charge, and all of a sudden we're disavowing any knowledge of it 20 years later.
Yeah, I agree. And as far as pulling out of the war, then you're going to have to admit that you did something wrong. And all throughout history, America, the powers that be have never admitted that they've ever done anything wrong, because then you take away your power and no one wants to have their power taken away.
Yeah.
So that has a lot to do. Well, I just wanted to make that statement.
Okay. Well, thanks for doing it.
Okay.
Take care. And that's going to be the last call for tonight. But I think raises a very good point. And I think the power, as always, will be in the proles, the people who are like you and me. We speak in a unified voice, in a loud voice. Maybe something will happen, but at least we will have expressed ourselves, and I think that's the most important thing of all. All right, not sure what's coming up next on this station, but I'm out of here. It's been Off the Wall, Emmanuel Goldstein. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night. Thank you. WUSB Stony Brook. We currently are looking for a blues DJ.
No, we're looking for Yoko.
All right. Well, you know, I said I was going to do it, and I do have to do what I say I'm going to do. That's my own personal requirement.
We got a request for Yoko.
Well, that was me.
No, we got another one.
Well, that was you.
No, we got yet another one.
All right, all right. Well, then you know what that means. That means that, actually, you know what? You can pull that patch. Pull all those patches, will you? Yeah.
This is a piece called Cambridge, 1969.
So, yeah, that's obviously Yoko there. I'm sorry.